Blow the horn, let's go.
In everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's so much to play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
He fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Roll Tide!
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Daniel Moore, get your canvas ready.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom, it was an old-fashioned pork barbecue cook-off Saturday at Bryant-Denny, with the Tide submitting scoring entries in all culinary categories, offense, defense, and special teams. Which entree and mess of fixings took your blue ribbon?
You know, there was a lot of good things to be happy about in this ball game. There was good play early on from the offense. We started a rhythm good early on as far as moving the ball. We were able to get our defense off the field quickly and give it back to the offense. You know, as happy as I am about the final score, though, I'm a little disappointed that we were not able to put more – for more of the touchdowns to come from the offense, from the traditional offensive set.
Yeah, we had five touchdowns in the game, and two of them were on offense. We missed on some long throws down the field. McCarron just barely missed a couple of the receivers. I think we kidded at one point that any other receiver on the team except for Mays probably would have caught the ball because, you know, Mays is a little shorter. I look at the offensive performance almost like one of those, psychiatrist puzzles that you look at, and you get two different people looking at it, and one of them sees the beautiful young girl, and the other one sees like the witch or the hag, because, you know, we had 75% completion percentage, 200 yards of passing offense, we had another 100-yard rushing game, but at the same time, we were 5 of 13 for third down conversions, we had 5 penalties, we had 6 punts. I mean, I think we're maturing. We're just not there yet.
No, it was a mixed bag. And, I mean, I think that's the thing I kind of want to start with, you know, was the third down conversions. Because when you go back and look, and you look that we were 5 of 13, you know, there's definitely something to build off of. I mean, we were 1 of 6 in the first half, which is what really concerns me. And we were able to be 4 of 7 in the second half. But at that point, the game wasn't in, you know, the game was not in doubt as much.
Right, yeah, that high conversion late in the game is not as significant because, you know, we came out pretty quickly in the second quarter, in the second half, you know, put up very quick 2 touchdowns, and then they were just done. They were done at that point. And so when the game was being contested, we could not convert third downs.
I think that, and like you said, you know, McCarron being 15 of 21 almost mirrors what he did last week at 15 of 20. I mean, if he'll give me 15 to 20 for 200 yards, I'll take that. And I think with the exception of a couple mistakes he made, I think he managed the game pretty well. I just think in key situations, you know, there was just some bad decisions. There was one play that we had 3rd and 8, and, you know, he went to scramble, and he just doesn't need to scramble. Because every time he tries to make a juke, all he does is give the defense time to get to him. And I think it was 3rd and 8, and he tried to scramble, and he got 4 yards. Well, last year, McElroy would have got a first down on that run. And so that's one thing he doesn't have, I think, that, you know, that McElroy did have. And so if you know you can't scramble, then just throw it away. If there's nothing there, don't even try to get a shot, you know, don't even try to take a shot scrambling the ball.
Yeah, I mean, he's trying to make a play there, so I'm not going to be overly critical on that component. You know, I think he needs to work on his touch on the deep ball a little bit. It's close. It's just not there. I think some additional reps in practice. And, you know, in the offensive line, I mean, I'm pleased with some of the progress that they made. But, you know, there again, I think we still have a ways to go. There was some pressure put on McCarron that, we get some better blocking up front. I think we take care of that.
You know, I have to say that I disagree a little bit from how I grade the line. I actually think that Steen and Warmack played their best game of the year so far. You know, looking back, I saw something that, you know, reaffirmed that this was only the sixth start for Steen. There was a big play from Trent over to the right, to the left side, excuse me, where he got on the second level to the linebacker and he sealed his guy off completely. Warmack was key on a couple pulls. We had some trap plays, which we haven't run all year, that worked nicely with Warmack. I actually thought the offensive line, I think they played their best game as a starting five that they've done this year.
Yeah, and I'm fine with that. I mean, you know, they're maturing and they're evolving and they're getting better. They're just still not there yet. I'm ready for them to be there.
Right.
I mean, this is week four.
Right.
We're entering the SEC schedule. I'm ready for the offensive line to be there, and they're not there yet.
I think we saw I will say the fact that Cyrus did not come in till late and the fact that Steen played as well as he did against a pretty decent Arkansas defense, I'm wondering if we might be looking at the starting five. I mean, I read somewhere where somebody made an interesting comment. He said, you know, if somebody goes down with an injury, Barrett's going to go play that position and Cyrus would come in at that point. But that, barring an injury, are we looking at the five that are finally starting to gel a little bit?
Well, and we might be, and the fact that they've showed some development this week, you know, probably is a good indication of that. I wonder if Steen didn't, you know, if it didn't just, you know, bubble up in his head that, you know, this is it. You know, if I miss this opportunity, they're going to shuffle things around. I'm gonna be sitting, and I'm, you know, it may be next season before I get another chance.
Well, let's face it, right? He see a couple guys in the name of John Michael Boswell and Tyler Love, and he sees that they're seniors, and he sees they're third on the depth chart, and, you know, he realizes how these things work.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. And if we're going to put Cyrus out there, then put Barrett back in his home position, and there's no way Steen beats him out.
Right. Let me ask you this on a couple other things on offense. What do you think about the fake field goal call? I know it gave him a spark, and, you know, Saban was quoted after the game, something to the effect of, you know, whether they were up 21 or down 21, that is, you know, the first time they were in a position at that distance from a field goal, they were going to call it, whether it was this game or the Florida game or whatever. I kind of think they should have held that play. I mean, once you run that play, you're not running that same exact formation play again for the year. It's on tape. So why not hold that until later in the season?
Well, I think that supposes that we only have one or two fake field goals. I don't mind us running it. I'm sure that we have, you know, a whole slew of those types of plays. I don't mind us running it in that situation. It makes people think, you know, that you know, Alabama will pull it down and they'll do some trick plays. So I'm not mad at it at all. I'm a little, I don't know if concern's the right word, but I was a little, you know, not impressed with the execution. You know, it was kind of cute that, you know, McCarron's the holder, and so he jumps back and into shotgun position. But the whole play seemed to develop in slow motion. You know, he stepped back, and there was one 1,000, two 1,000, three 1,000 before the ball was snapped. And then it was a high arcing pass to Michael Williams, and I just could imagine. It was almost watching it in slow motion. And I could almost just read his mind like, oh, shit, I better catch this one, because it's just right there on his
fingertips.
And if you go back and look at some of the images, he caught the second half of the ball. And so it wasn't, you know, a pristine basket catch. He kind of caught the second half of the ball. You know, I'm certainly glad he caught it. Can you imagine the guttural, you know, sounds of the stadium if he had not?
Well, I think that McCarron didn't need to put so much air into that ball. I think he could have put a lot less air into that ball, and it would have been a much easier catch. And going back and looking at that play, because I did want to go back and just slow-mo that play, I wish it would have been a little quicker developing, but I did like the action of it, because when you go back and look at it, they send the guy in motion to the right, and that pulls the safety over. Then they take Cade Foster and they take the other tight end, and they start sending them to the middle of the field, which takes the last two guys on the edge to go with them. I thought it was the defensive end that was covering Michael Williams. It was actually the nose tackle. the nose tackle actually went toward the quarterback and at the very last minute saw that Michael Williams had rubbed off his guy like he was acting to blocking and starts going after him when Michael Williams already has a pretty big head start. And so the design of the play, if the nose tackle had not done something he shouldn't even have done, the guy, Michael Williams, would have been by himself completely.
Well, it sounds like the design of the play was significantly better than the design of the defense, which, you know, which I guess, you know, that's part of it. You get that personnel group, you know, in there to block a long field goal. You get that personnel group, and then you do something sort of unconventional.
But they should have thrown it quicker. To your point, it should have come out quicker. Don't throw so much air in the ball. And we because with him throwing it up like a high arcing like that, you and I both at the same time probably thought, oh, my gosh, what if he does not catch this ball?
Yeah, I think what it does, though, you talked about, you know, why would we reveal that? And I think, well, you know, this next week against Florida are coming up. We may need a long field goal as a differential in the game. And if we put the thought in the front's mind that, you know, maybe I need to slow down my roll here on this, you know, attempting to block or get after this because they may throw it over my head. So
that potentially gives us an extra second to get up to get that field goal off the ground.
To get that kick off the ground. Hey, I just have to say, you know, good coaching, but someone needs to teach AJ McCarron how to sneak a football. You know, he lined up on the goal line and went when we went for the quarterback sneak, which was the wrong play call there.
I agree with that.
He lined up, and if you watch him when he steps under center, he'll line up and he'll have his feet, they'll be parallel, but they'll be even with one another. The toes of the right foot are even with the toes of the left foot. The heels, you know, they're kind of lined up even. He's standing square. And when he went up to the line of scrimmage, he had one foot clearly in front of the other. I mean, a good distance. And, you know, almost like he was as best as he could lining up under center, trying to get into a sprinter stance. And I think we yelled out quarterback sneak, you know, even before the ball was snapped. He's got to line up there and look, you know, his stature and his standing position. He has to look consistent from play to play to play, whatever he's doing.
No, I agree with that. You know, I didn't notice his footwork until after the play had been run and you had mentioned it at the game. But just in general, going back to that series of plays, you know, you've got first and goal at the one and you've got Trent Richardson. And I mean, you know, put back in the defensive lineman. Was it Brandon Lewis? Yeah, I mean, you know, put him back in there as your lead blocker, or put in Jostin Fowler and Trent Richardson, first and goal at the one. Here's three tries, guys, and stop me. I mean, first they do the sneak, and then they do a delay handoff to Trent. I mean, why not just go right at him?
Yeah, I don't understand it either. I mean, we should have, you know, if we wanted to mix things up, okay, we're going to go through the one hole, we're going to try the two hole, and then we're going to try the three hole. You know, we're gonna put beef on beef and follow the big guy's butt into the end zone.
Right. What did you think about how we came out to start the game? I noticed Phil Savage in the play-by-play, he commented about us in the hurry-up offense versus getting in the huddle, and he said we looked like we had a much better flow early in the game in the hurry-up, and that's when we had those first plays we were stringing together, you know, before we had to line up for the fake field goal. What did you think about showing the hurry-up offense?
Well, I think, you know, a couple things. I think you can come out, especially the first series, when everyone knows the first, you know, five, six, eight plays that are going to run, and you can run those very crisply, very quickly, because you've practiced that, you've walked through that, you know, a number of times. They could have walked through the first five plays in the locker room right before they come out. We got the ball. You know, right there to start the game, and so we run those and move those down. That's one sort of bucket of thought. I think another bucket of thought is, you know, Saban's got an ego, and he wants to, you know, he wants to show off that his team can run some creative offense too. And so, you know, Bobby Petrino is an offensive mastermind, but you know, maybe he doesn't own all the rights on doing something unconventional. Or certainly that's not, you know, not expected. Who expected us to necessarily come out and do that? And and to run, you know, pretty crisply in some you know, non-huddle or no huddle, and then it a different stage of the game. But we showed some Trent and Eddie in the backfield together out of a shotgun, sort of a shotgun T formation. And so, you know, we're not going to be as dynamic as a Petrino offense, but I think there's a little bit of them that said, hey, I can be creative too.
Well, what did you think about DeAndre White, or lack of DeAndre White? And when I was looking at the stats, you know, out of the 15 balls McCarron completed, you know, three go to Mays, and I guess the majority of those actually went to Mays. He ended up, excuse me, with five catches. But then your other wide receivers all had a catch apiece. I mean, when is some, you know, we were so excited the last 2 weeks that somebody else was stepping up with Mays, and we didn't see it in the game.
No, we really didn't see it this week, and I'm not exactly sure when DeAndre came into the game. He didn't start, and then he didn't have a catch in the game, and he did not play much on offense at all. I was, you know, kind of surprised by that. And so, you know, for whatever reason, he remains in the coach's doghouse. And I know we're not talking special teams right now, but DeAndre did come out on special teams, you know, sort of the gunner position on kickoffs, had a tackle, had a near tackle. And so, you know, dude's at least trying to do something to claw his way back into, you know, the good graces.
Well, I was a little surprised at how pleased we were with Kevin Norwood in the Penn State game, and how pleased we were from the play of Kenny Bell and Smelly. I just was surprised that there wasn't any other catches to go around. What'd you think about the defense?
You know, on defense, I probably think a couple of things that really jump out at me. On defense, I think that we were stifling at times, but we were not, and we were spectacular at times, but we were not across the board dominating. Everywhere I read,
kind of like the offense, right?
Kind of like the offense, you know. Everywhere I read, you know, dominating defense, Bama hammers with defense, all these sort of, you know, kind of clever things, but you know, we gave up what, 16 first downs and. You know, two passing touchdowns. We purposely did not blitz. I think our scheme on defense was to, you know, disguise our coverage. And I think, you know, according to Saban, you know, we only blitzed once. You know, I don't think we really got after them other than just the front four. I think our emphasis was, you know, on the back seven. And I'm fine with that. I think we really missed C.J. Mosley in the game.
Yeah, it was after he went out, you know, I didn't realize it was so early until I went back and looked at the stats. I mean, he went down at the 6.5-minute mark, or excuse me, almost 7 minutes left in the first quarter. When he went out, you and I noticed that, you know, surprisingly, that Trey DePriest comes into the game right away, and he looked really clueless.
Well, it's interesting to think we're so deep at linebacker, and we really have a ton of you know, quality depth at linebacker, but we're so specialized in what we do, and C.J. Mosley is the most unique of our linebackers. You know, even if Hightower went down, and he's one of our best linebackers, we have linebackers that are more like Hightower
than
we
Mosley.
Have a linebacker
yep.
that's like yeah. Mosley. And so when we come out of our sort of our base, right, and we bring in a nickel and dime, and so a lot of our specialty packages, which is really what we run most of the time, C.J. Mosley's the middle linebacker.
Yeah, it was funny.
He patrols that middle.
Yeah, it was funny. Saban said after the game that we had five packages built in for Arkansas, and he was the only guy in all five of the packages.
Exactly. And so that tells you, you know, we saw a lot of drill that we would not have seen, because if we've got five packages and Mosley's in all of those, well, guess what? Then that sounds like none of them are our base, or what Saban calls our base, which is where we do have, you know, the true 3-4. So, you know, missing Mosley. And then you think about, we spent a lot of time disguising coverage. Well, Mosley is our best cover linebacker. And so we could have done even more disguises of coverage with Mosley in the game. And then potentially that could have freed up from some safety or corner blitzes.
What did you think about the play of the people we rotated in? Because, you know, if you, I was not impressed with Trey DePriest. And that, just to be fair to the kid, he's just out of high school. That, you know, CJ gets hurt at midfield. He gets brought in on that first drive. It's a very tough situation to bring him in. But, you know, I have to wonder what Nico did, because right after CJ's injury, Nico was the first guy off the bench, you know, or not off the bench, but, you know, he's our base guy. He came in right away, and he was only in two or three plays. And then when he came out, Trey was next up on the list. And so to your point, no Tana Patrick, you know, no Jarrell Harris. We go to Trey next, and then next thing you know, we're trying Adrian Hubbard and Jarrell Harris at the end of the ballgame. Yeah, I guess what I'm asking is, what do you think about Nico? Why didn't Nico stay in there more than two or three plays?
Well, because he's ill-suited for that position. I mean, he's more of a true middle linebacker, you know, in a 3-4.
He's like the Dante.
Well, yeah, and he's probably more of an old-school, you know, Mike Singletary type middle linebacker than even Dante. You know, I think Dante's even a little more versatile than Nico. And I'm not discounting Nico's talent. I just think the skill set for the scheme that we were trying to run is not his strength. You know, that's why we saw Trey, you know, just give him a go at that. You know, we tried some Adrian Hubbard and Jarrell, just like you said.
Trey had no clue what he was doing out there.
Well, and
he was totally lost.
Well, Jarrell, you know, rarely has a clue when he's out there, and Adrian Hubbard, you know, what it says is, amazingly as it sounds, with all the talent we have at linebacker, we just don't have depth at that skill set at that particular linebacker. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, we're gonna have to figure that out because Mosley's, you know, questionable for most of practice this week. He's questionable for the game, so we're gonna need someone that can step in and be that player. I wouldn't be surprised, and this is kind of, you know, left field, but I wouldn't be surprised if Vinny Sinceri spends most of the week kind of learning that position, because he was a linebacker in high school, and we have him actually now as a safety, and he seems to have the skill set more so than any other linebacker on our team. You know, hell, maybe it's Mark Barron that plays.
I was just about to say that, but what's really interesting about this is that, you know, Saban calls it his nickel, or you know, he doesn't want to acknowledge that that's his base defense, but it really is. But if you think of the traditional, you know, if you think of the traditional nickel defense, you've got five DBs in the game, and those five DBs are in coverage. And a lot of teams that play nickel aren't even counting on their linebackers to be in coverage at all. They're not dropping in coverage at all. What Saban does with Mosley, you just don't see other teams do that with a linebacker and a nickel.
No, and that's where
You talked about, it's a nickel with six DBs.
Yeah, yeah, and we could have discussed coverage a lot more. You know, you think of dropping, you know, CJ in the flat, maybe a zone type coverage, and that allows you to send Barron, or that allows you to send, you know, when we go to nickel, you know, we'll play three cornerbacks, and so you can get a situation where you're dropping Mosley in coverage. You still have 5 men in coverage, but you're blitzing a cornerback. And it's just a lot of different things you can do. And so I think that we're going to have to figure out, we're going to have to manufacture, you know, a Mosley-like player to situationally roam that middle. And I think that's going to be important. You know, it was important against Arkansas. They gained a lot of yards passing the ball. They had a lot of success sort of in the sweet spot, the middle of the defense passing the ball. And right, we're going to figure that out. If it's kind of some sort of shading Barron that way, or we come up with some crazy package with Vinny, we're just going to have to almost invent something to accommodate for that. Because any other – and I don't want anybody to get hurt, but of right, the linebackers on the team, he was probably the least – you know, the player that we're least suited to just roll someone out there as a
replacement. Oh, sure. Oh, sure. And if you think about when we go to the dime and you think about how we line up, you know, we move Dante Hightower up to an end, right, to pressure the quarterback. And in the middle, we have Barron and Mosley. And so what's interesting is We put our physical safety at a linebacker position. I mean, even if you think of the dime, how many teams that run a traditional dime defense have one of their six DBs 2 yards off the line of scrimmage in the middle of the field?
Right.
It's very unique. It's very unique how we do things.
Yeah, it's very multiple in how we play our defense, which I think is incredible. But then you kind of see, I guess, maybe a flaw in that approach when you have someone as unique as Mosley go down. What else did you see on defensive culture?
You know, I'm always, Saban hates people like me because I'm always looking for sacks, and I know there's a lot more to just
affect
looking
at the quarterback, man. It's affect the quarterback.
You know, yes, I believe you can affect the quarterback, but I also see other teams that affect the quarterback and also finish the play and register the sacks. And so when I went back and watched the game, I saw what Saban was talking about. I mean, there was a lot of hits on the quarterback. Quentin Dial, he lunged at the quarterback. That was a good call. There were several other plays that were very close to that, where he got hit, just, it was within the two-step rule. To give Phil Savage credit for something else, he commented after Arkansas threw the pick six that C.J. Mosley sought out the quarterback at the goal line and just absolutely leveled him. Mm-hmm. And so I think there was a clear message from the coaching staff that if you don't get to him and get a sack, you still better get a hit on him. We want him to be banged up by the third quarter.
Yeah, and banged up he was. Speaking of the physical play, one of the performances that really stood out to me on Saturday was Dre Kirkpatrick. He may have played his best game in a Bama uniform, and I think it was certainly his most physical game. He racked up 6 tackles. He had 3 pass breakups. And at one point, when he and Barron, the safety, is coming over, and they kind of collide in midair, both going for the interception. Either of them could have had it if the other weren't there. But Dre got a little banged up, but then he got up, and the trainer came over to check him out, and he just completely kind of shook off the trainer, and he just showed some more physicality than what we've seen from him. I was impressed by that.
Well, just to comment real quick on him getting banged up, because you and I know Saban has talked about this a lot. Make the other team quit. Out physical them, and just to paraphrase, don't show a weakness. And I guarantee you that jumping up before the trainer got over to lean over him, when he jumped up, even though he was still a little bit woozy, that was all about, I'm tough, and I'm not showing a weakness here. And so I thought that was interesting that he popped up like he did. But there's a mixed bag from my perspective on his play, just because I'm old school as far as how you tackle. And I know how they do the thuds in practice, and that helps with injuries and that kind of stuff. But I'm old school, man. You put your helmet on their right under their shoulder pads. You grab, you lock onto those hips and you drive them into the ground. And so, this little bumping from the side to knock people down, I see more DBs that do that and they fall down and the running back keeps running. So his tackling, he was physical, but these guys, he needs to wrap up.
At the end of the day, wrapping up is the right way to do it. People, go for the big, sort of boom shot, and we need to coach, kids out of that. But I'm going to kind of underscore, my comment is even that level of contact we've not seen from Dre. And so the fact that he's up there trying to, kind of give that kill shot, even if it's not with a wrap up, the fact that he's lowering his shoulder and hitting somebody, I'm going to take that as definite sign of improvement, and a willingness on his part to get in there and grind.
Well, they said he had put on about 20, 25 pounds, after the fourth quarter program, and he definitely looks different as far as the makeup. You know, I will say that, you know, I do think of all the defensive players and the improvement from last year to this year, I think he has by far made the most improvement of any other player. I think a Barron and Upshaw and a Dante Hightower, they have just continued to, you know, to go upward. But his trajectory, from last year to this year is significant. I mean, he was even jumping routes in the game. I mean, he was even coming off his man because he was eyeing the quarterback, and he was jumping on other people's routes and, you know, tackling them short of first downs. And had he not jumped those routes, they would have converted a few more first downs.
That's probably right. I'm gonna you know, kind of weigh up there. You know, Daquan Menzie in terms of one of the more developed or most improved defensive backs from last year, and I'm just gonna give a shout out for his interception. He went up and, you know, batted the ball, caught his own deflection, ran it in for a touchdown. That was a backbreaker when he did that. You know, just before half, extended to a 10-point ball game. That was a backbreaker. I think that really was deflating. Going into half and then coming right back out of half, you know, we stomp them with two quick touchdowns. That's just killer activity.
Were you surprised to learn that was his first pick of his Alabama career?
Yeah, I guess so.
It just seems like that can't be right.
Yeah, because he played so much last year, you know, even coming off the injury, and he's come so close to a couple picks even this year. And so the fact that was his first, you know, I guess a little bit of a surprise, but I don't take that as any indication to his contribution and his performance, because, you know, Daquan Menzie's a hell of a DB.
No, I would agree with that. Do you have anything else that jumped out at you on defense?
Not really on defense. You want to take a look at special teams? What culture are there?
You know, sharing some of your pessimism from last week, the first thing that jumped out at me, it'd be easy to talk about the punt return, which I'm sure you'll talk about in a minute, but I just have to go back to a buddy of mine that said, why don't we just have tryouts on the quad for our kickers? Because we can't seem to give a scholarship to anybody who can consistently put the ball in the end zone. I went back and looked at the stats, and, you know, I was so impressed. And I said, boy, I wish we had the Arkansas place kicker and the Arkansas punter on our team, because we gave up 10 yards on both. So just to quickly talk about this, their punter averaged 44 yards a punt. We averaged 36. On kickoffs, his average was 70. Ours was 60. I mean, in special teams, what jumps out at me is the first two or three kickoffs were out of the end zone. Trent just watched them sail over his head.
Yeah, you know, short kicks and short punts. I made a note of that. I don't know what else to add to what you've said. It's very frustrating. The fact that they were kicking them out of the end zone, I wish we could do that. And, you know, and they had some booming punts. I mean, we consistently kicked, you know, to the 15 or, you know, 12 yard line, and that's just aggravating. We need to do better than that. And in punting the ball, we need to do better, and then, you know, better than what we're getting. And
we're very fortunate to have the kind of defense that we have. But I mean, just to touch on this for a quick second, after kickoffs, they started from the 37 once, the 38 once, and the 42 once in the ball game. That was their average starting position on offense.
And that's a good day starting the ball. I mean, you know, Saban talks about, you know, drive start. That's a very positive drive start. And, you know, we gave it to them.
What'd you think about the punt return?
It was a work of art. I mean, it was a work of art. I don't know, you know, how else to describe it. You know, we've said, you know, Mays is not as good as Hobby, but he's good, and you know, he's getting better. Okay, he's in the league now. That was a work of art. 83 yards, cut across the field.
Several times.
But, you know, when he went to the sideline, and he kind of hitched up his step, waiting for the block, and then just darted across the field. It was just a work of art. It was beautiful.
Well, and there were some key blocks. You know, Vinny had a key block around the 10 or 15 yard line, and Will Lowry had a key block around the 50 yard line where he didn't even get hands on the guy, but he had the presence to quickly just get right in between Mays and this defender, and then he put his hands up toward his chest so the ref could tell clearly that he wasn't any way near pushing him in the back or anything. And it's just so good to see fundamentally. I don't know if it's because we have better athletes now that can play those special teams positions than 5 or 10 years ago. But remember how many times that if we ever had a punt return, we just saw a yellow flag and there had to be a block in the back?
Yeah, it's used to seeing laundry. You know, as soon as he was breaking it, I couldn't resist looking back and, you know, where's the flag? And there wasn't one. And so, you know, that was nice. Hey, I've got a key question for you.
Okay.
How are you going to screw up our mini game balls this week?
Well, you know, we actually have a request from our audience. And I'm going to go ahead and kind of tee this up for you. He might like the anti-game ball to become a regular edition on our podcast. But we have to start off with the anti-game ball for that damn Neil Diamond song. What the hell is up with that? Come on, I know you got something to add to that.
You know, we've been going to Bama games, and, you know, I'll just nicely say at least, you know, 20 years. And I can readily collect that in 3 times in 20 years have we heard Sweet Caroline played when we were watching Alabama. And so, you know, 3 weeks ago it was at Penn State for the very first time. And in the last 2 weeks, it's been in Bryant-Denny. And so, you know, I guess somehow we carry that back with us, and that's our new tradition. I don't understand. The last 2 weeks that we've done it in Bryant-Denny, it's kind of, you know, during a possession change or quarter change or, you know, whenever we're doing it late in the game, we'll do Sweet Caroline. And in the very next, you know, sort of break in possession or change of possession, we'll play Dixieland Delight by Alabama. Now, that should be our Sweet Caroline. And hell, we haven't played that song in 3 or 4 years. That should be our go-to song every week because it sort of has some Alabama, you know, tie-in. It's more culture. It's more, you know, regionally relevant. You know, this Neil Diamond, geez, man, really?
Well, I just hope we don't start really, you know, playing it. A, you know, playing it at all, but B, gosh, if they start playing it more than one time like we heard. Don't get me wrong, Penn State. I loved coming to Penn State.
I loved that being part of their tradition.
Yes, but we better not be playing it, much less playing it 9 or 10 times. My next game ball on offense, this has to go to Trent Richardson. And obviously he could be a game ball on numerous occasions.
That's not a mini game ball.
This is a mini game ball.
Because
I want to pull out a quote that just epitomizes Coach Saban and epitomizes what he puts into his players and how he conditions them. This is a quote after the game. He says, quote, "I'm happy with what I've done, but I can never be complacent about it. I know I can get better. I have a lot to work on. I still have to work on a lot of my pass protection. I missed a couple reads this week. I left a lot of yards on the field. I know I could have done better. 126 yards is a good game, but I can do a lot better." I love that. I love that one of the stars of our team is saying I missed a couple of my pass protections this week.
So let me get this right. You've given an anti-game ball to Neil Diamond and a mini big ass game ball to Trent Richardson's soliloquy.
Yes, that is correct.
That's awesome.
Who are you giving your game ball to?
I struggle actually to find a recipient on offense.
See? I came up with something creative.
You can call it that. I'm going to give my mini game ball in the true spirit of the mini game ball. I'm going to give it to Darius Hanks on offense. He only had two catches for 13 yards, but he just as a senior leader was really demonstrative on the field, I thought, and was really out there. I think he gave a lot of hustle, a lot of hard work, and he just seemed to sort of kind of like Colin Peake. I gave it to Colin Peake a couple times last year because he just had that senior sort of spirit.
Right.
Field, and I saw that in Darius Hanks today. And so in the true spirit of what the mini game ball is all about,
right,
Darius Hanks.
Well, of his...
How are you screwing up the defensive?
Well, hold on. Of his two catches, I do want to say that of his two catches, one of his two catches was a key third down play where it looked like he couldn't possibly catch this ball. He was covered so well. He still catches the ball. His helmet gets flown off as he gets nailed by a defensive lineman. He runs over and picks up his helmet, and he immediately gets out wide for the next play. So to your point, that was pretty damn impressive.
There you go. How are you screwing up the defensive game ball?
You know, on the defense, I think you're probably going to copy me here because normally you do a lot of what I do. I think my game ball on defense is going to have to go to Jesse Williams. And the reason why is because we need somebody else to step up. We need somebody else to give us some tackles for loss. We need someone else to fill up the stat sheet. And so Jesse Williams was pretty instrumental in stuffing the run game. And for him to come away with five tackles and have 1.5 tackles for loss, I was pretty impressed with his first big splash.
Very nice. I'm going mini game ball to Nick Gentry. Had a big sack, 10-yard loss. It was the only sack we had on the game, and he really planted Tyler Wilson with some emphasis. And so
tackled him the way you're supposed to tackle.
Tackled the way you're supposed to tackle with a little extra mustard there. So I'm giving my mini game ball again in the true spirit of the mini game ball to Nick Gentry.
All right, well, you always ask me what I think about next week's opponent first, so I'm going to put it back to you first. What do you think about how this game's going to shape up with Florida? I saw it was going to be an 8 o'clock start time, which I kind of wish it would have been a day game at the Swamp instead of giving those guys time to get revved up.
Yeah, 8 Eastern, but you're absolutely right. I think the home crowd is going to be an advantage. You know, certainly for Florida, you know, similar to us having the true home crowd advantage this week against Arkansas. I think it's going to be a true hostile territory style game. You know, with all respect to Penn State, there wasn't the hostile territory that I think that we're going to get down in Gainesville. I think the speed of Demps and Rainey, I think that's going to be a real live challenge. That's going to be something that we're going to have to match. I think we do have a lot of good team speed, and so we can situationally combat that. But we're going to have to figure out
the Mosley thing.
CJ Mosley.
Yep.
If we don't have him out there, or if he's not all the way there, then that's going to be problematic, and we're going to have to solve for that. I do think we escape the Swamp, but I think it's a 24-17 type ball game.
Oh, so you think that close, huh?
I do.
All right. Well, I think that Charlie Weiss has brought a lot of confidence to this quarterback. I think he seems to be playing a lot better than he was before. I think they're kind of taking what the defense gives them. I think this will be the first really true test of 7 or 8 guys that can run on a defense like we're going to give them. I don't think it's going to be quite like last year. But I really think that it's going to, I think it's going to be a 2-3 touchdown margin. I actually think we're going to put some points on them. I thought the Arkansas game would be, you know, a couple touchdowns, and I really think this is going to be something more like a 35-13 kind of game. I really think they might give us a test early in the ball game, but I think we're gonna put it on them.
Well, I hope you're right. I think that their crowd, you know, last year where we got up on them, started to get up on them, and they just sort of deflated. I think that their crowd pumps them back up, and so I think that is the difference. Where it's a ball game, we get up on them, and instead of them deflating, I think their crowd pumps them back up, and that's what keeps it a close game. So okay. We'll see. You know, it's a rare instance of where I hope you're right and I'm not, but you know, we'll see how that plays.
All right.
But this is for Dave and Tom and Sweet Caroline. This has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Please hit us up on email at the Alabama Football Podcast. We're going to be putting together some newsletters and updates to keep everyone informed. So hit us at alabamafootballpodcast@gmail.com, and we'll make sure you're on the list. Of course, we're always on iTunes and Facebook. Roll Tide.
Blow the horn. Let's go.
And everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the only place they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
Keep fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Roll Tide.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Dominate the guy you're playing against and make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO with the team.
Daniel Moore,
get your canvas ready.
All right.